think this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. And the captain's chair today is underneath a very large propeller from a lake carrier in Toledo, Ohio. This is your Captain Joe, and I am up in the chair. It is just a little bit after one bell of the afternoon watch. And the reason that I am in Toledo is that I am here with some of my Great Lakes people, people that worked for me when I was the commander up in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. And we have a gathering every year. And this year, when I get to the binnacle list, I will talk a little bit about why we're not doing some of the things that we normally do. But one of the things that we were able to do was that I am at the Great Lakes Historical Museum in Toledo, Ohio. And it is absolutely splendid. And for those of you Great Lakes people, freshwater sailors, this is the place to come. They have a model and the story of Cliff's Victory, which is well known to people like John. They have a model and the story of ships like J. Burton Ayres. There's a big display about the original Mackinac, the real Mackinac. And so I elected to do this broadcast from that museum. I went in, and I'm getting ahead of my usual part here. I will deliver my usual greetings and the binnacle list in just a minute, but I wanted to establish some continuity here that I went in and I met some really lovely young people that are part of the volunteer group that take care of this. And I got to visiting with them and was telling them how important their work is and how important it is that we have things like this museum to explain, especially to the children coming up behind us, who we are and how we got here and all of the things that are connected with that. So I then bought a full ticket, which includes a tour of a lake carrier, which is right next to the museum. And I may not, with my friend and colleague David Binnacle List entry, climb the brow, and the ladders are steep. I may not do that today. I may rest up and we may try it tomorrow. But I went around and I noticed a few factual discrepancies. So I have made notes, and I now have the card of the executive director of the museum, and I'm going to send her a congratulatory signal, and then I'm going to recommend that she make these few changes to bring fact into congruency with what she's gotten on the labels. But it's a wonderful, wonderful museum. Well worth a trip to Toledo and well worth going in and talking to the people who take care of all of these artifacts. There's a lot of information. There are a fourth order Fresnel lens. There is a fifth order Fresnel lens, just like mine. All of these things are inside this museum, and it's well worth the visit. My greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people who are someplace besides their home port. And if you happen to be one of those people that is outside of your home port on a good mission, then well done to you. And if it is because you are in hospital or in some sort of treatment facility, know that, as always, you are in the palm of my hand. Which takes me now to the binnacle list. In the week, not one of my academy classmates, but one of my closest friends a year behind me at the academy, Captain Jack Flattery, who is also a brother icebreaker captain, crossed his own bar. And it had been some years since Jack and I had been in contact with each other. And every time that happens, every time somebody who with whom I had a long term, in this case over 70 year relationship, even though we may not have touched fingertips in the last few years of that relationship, every time one of them crosses the bar, I feel not only regret, but a strong sense of guilt that I did not do better. And so that leads me to remind all hands that if you have people in your life with whom you have a long-term relationship, and for one reason or another, you have not been in contact with that person, now might be the time to do it, because you may not have the opportunity again. The rest of the binnacle list, that is my crossing of the bar part of the binnacle list. I'm hopeful that Captain O'Brien, who is engineering for me today, will have made a booking to get his orthopedic problems worked out. And Dr. Phillips continues to improve daily. His surgery turned out to be less dramatic than what we had all thought was going to happen and what he was even predicting himself. And well done on that, my dear and good doctor. And the my friend and colleague David, on whom I have reported and who remains on the binnacle list because he still has some work to be done. Josh, of course, continues to steady as she goes. Clear scopes, for Josh was a radarman, a shipmate of mine in Vietnam in the Coast Guard cutter Ingham. And finally, in my own case, when I return from this trip, next week I visit with the ever-lovely Vivian. We're going to pull Mr. Foley and all thereunto pertaining and see how well I do. And that is on Thursday next. And after that, we'll make some decisions depending on the quality and quantity thereof. And that's what I have to say about all of that. I've had to take round turns on all the couplings on this trip. And if any of you, those of you who are Captain Joe's people and who are encumbered with this external plumbing, will also take those round turns, you'll be able to travel, especially if you submit yourself to the humiliation of being pushed around the airports, which is what I have had to do. And it is because of those people that I'm able to travel and able to keep on doing all of these things that I continue to do. I've talked before about the integrity of the global positioning system, and a report came to me today in one of my sources that said both the global positioning system and also the tracking system called AIS is being jammed and is being probably there are efforts also to move the positions. I tell everybody this so that you will back up your GPS positioning wherever you may be in the world, and especially if you're in a place where it's important that you know exactly where you are, that you back it up with some traditional navigational systems. When I take Midori, for that is the name of my soon-to-be transfer title 29, Cal 29, when I take her out, I am going to be taking her out with paper charts, a compass, magnetic compass that I have adjusted myself, and I think that I'm also going to get a Polaris so as to lay down precise piloting lines of position. All of you navigators out there know about LOPs, and I am going to be using paper charts, magnetic compass, and a Polaris. So be a little bit skeptical of or attentive. I think that's the way to do it. I'm sure that the Department of Defense, which runs our GPS system for all Americans, and anybody else who has compatible equipment will tell us if there is any significant jamming for the telephones that you carry around in your hand or for the map programs that you have in your motor cars. In icebreaker construction news, I feel compelled to report this even though I don't have a great deal of information yet. But I'm reporting this because it is time for us to be thinking about how we are going to make all of this work. And the Canadian company Davies, which has just received a contract to build a very large icebreaker for the Arctic for Canada. Canada does not go to the Antarctic. It is not signatory to the Antarctic Treaty. It has no research stations on the Antarctic continent, which is one of the requirements. And so this ship will be built for Arctic purposes. She will belong to the Canadian Coast Guard, and she will be painted in the great red and white Canadian livery. So Davies has the contract to build that ship. Now, Canada has been saying for 40 years that they were going to build this large icebreaker. I have seen now two sets of drawings and a model as far back as 40 years ago for a Canadian, large Canadian icebreaker to work in the Arctic. But they never got to the point of appropriating the money, and now they have appropriately. Parliament has appropriated the money, and the contract has been let. So we probably are going to see some steel cut. Well, the significant thing for us is that the Davy Company has also bought a shipyard down in Galveston called Gulf Copper. I'm not familiar with Gulf Copper. I don't know what they have ever built in the way of very large ships. But I am familiar with Davy, and I know that they have built a number of ice class and ice capable ships. So they bought this shipyard down in Galveston, Texas. And during this time, we can expect that they are going to actively bid on every icebreaker contract that the Coast Guard puts out. Now, there is a word being bruited about that my Coast Guard is also interested in building a class of medium icebreakers, and these are being called Arctic security cutters. They're going to be about the same dimensions as a wind class, maybe a little bit larger, maybe a little bit heavier. And so I declare right now, this very minute, that if they were to replicate the winds with more power, a little bit deeper draft, but the same hull form, no attempt to put a bow propeller on. The winds, of course, had a bow propeller, which got wiped off the first time they went into Antarctic ice and was tried a couple more times and then was never replaced. The casting through which the bow propeller shaft went was plugged and then plated over. And when my north wind was out of the water up in the dry dock and I would get down underneath her, I would walk all the way forward and I could see where that had originally been installed. The other thing that I could see, which we never tried to replicate in icebreakers again, were bilge keels, keels that go along the turn of the bilge to help dampen the rolling. And I would get down underneath my north wind and walk from one end to the other, and I would see the weld markings where those bilge keels had been installed. They too were wiped off the first time that she got into multi-year under pressure Antarctic ice at maybe 18 feet thick. So these ships that are being called the Arctic, as against the polar, Arctic polar class, they may polar security, they could be, well, more capable than the wind class in terms of ice thickness that they could build. And there's absolutely no reason why they could not deploy to the Antarctic. I will be watching with great care, to say nothing of enthusiasm for the first drawings, model, artist conception of what these ships will look like, and we'll make whatever comments that I feel that I doubt that I'll have any influence over the design. I will say right here, for whatever influence it may have, that they would do well just to replicate the wind class or a scaled down polar class hull form, which is the tried and true. It works. It worked for the Russians in 1912 with Yermak. It works today with Polar Star and Polar Sea, and would work today if Northwind were still in commission. I have to say how impressed I am with the city of Toledo. I've never been into the town before until David and Ivy, my Great Lakes family here, took me there. It is a town that is undergoing considerable cleaning up, and it is clean. It looks to me like it's being very carefully planned, and I just like it a lot. And I look forward to coming back here sometime soon and to spend some more time in this particular museum. The two ships that we have been talking about in the previous broadcasts that were burning, the first one is the Wanhai 503 burning off of the southwest coast of India. In my hurried battle preps for today's broadcast, I was not able to find an update, and I did not go on to marine traffic because I'm just working from my Andy phone, and marine traffic does not do well on the Andy phone. So I don't know if she's still burning, but the car carrier, Morning Midas, off of the coast of Alaska, is apparently no longer burning. And she's the one that's got about 65 or 70 all electric vehicles. She's got lots of batteries with difficult to extinguish battery materials. And it appears as if her fire is out of, has been burned itself out. And they've already had a salvage crew aboard her once, and they're going to get her under tow. There does not appear to be any pollution coming from her. And she's not in any stability danger of rolling over or of actually losing the ship. So if the salvage people are competent, as I have every reason to believe that they are, they will get a line on her and get her towed into a port where they can do a much more thorough evaluation. So it's possible that this ship can be cleaned up and maybe even returned to service. It remains to be seen how much damage has been done to her internally. And so we'll see whether or not she's going to be able to be returned to service. I missed a couple of things last week. And so the first one is that on Saturday, we celebrated the Army's 250th birthday. And I am always in particular happy to celebrate Army events because of my honorary membership in Captain O'Brien's Army unit in Vietnam. And so it was, it looked to me, the little pieces of it I saw, and I did not watch the whole thing. In fact, I didn't watch any of it. I watched little film clips of it later, but it appeared to me as if the marching units needed to go back to basic training and learn how to march in step. Either that, or a decision had been made by somebody that it was not going to be a marching parade, it was going to be a sauntering parade, which is what it looked like to me some of those units were doing. It remains to be seen, and I'm very interested because I spent my last 2.5 years of high school were in a high school in Washington, D.C. I'm very familiar with the city, and it remains to be seen how much damage to the city streets. Many of the city streets have the streetcar tracks still in the streets. They've been all been plastered over, but they're down there, F Street, for example. So so that was my reaction to the Army parade. Saturday also was Flag Day. And we celebrate Flag Day and we celebrate the beauty and the integrity that the flag represents, the 13 original colonies, the 13 original states, and then the star that represents each one of the states in our much beloved Union. So, and then Saturday or Sunday, of course, was Father's Day. And I was the beneficiary of having my fatherhood recognized here among all of these lovely people. I am the most fortunate of men because here and in so many other places, I am surrounded by so many wonderful people and so much love, affection, and respect. And for that, as always, I am enormously grateful. The next Ingham has been, her construction has been put on hold. I may have mentioned this before. I'm going to mention it again because it's upsetting me considerably, and I feel compelled to, as soon as I'm able, to go to Eastern Shipbuilding and do a reconnaissance on the ground myself just to see what the hell is going on, because they have to have finished most of the hull girder, and I want to see how much of the ship has been completed and to select the place in which we're going to weld a piece coming out of my Ingham, our Ingham, all of us who sailed in her, in all of her missions. And so the reunion at which that is all going to happen is in the last weekend of September and the first day of October. And I am going to go ahead with getting that out of her and taking it with me. And then at the appropriate time, go to Eastern Shipbuilding and have it welded into the next Ingham. But I remain confident that somebody out there is going to have